saw my baby then. She was stretched out on that long white table, so young, so sweet, so fair. Well, let her go, God bless her. Well, wherever her soul may be, she could have searched this whole world over.
It is a beautiful, kind of a mild day, January day.
That's true.
In Wisconsin today, which is fabulous.
Yeah, nice and sunny.
Yeah, I was actually very excited. I went out and got in my Jeep this morning and did not freeze my arse off.
Good.
While waiting for it to you know, warm up and get ready to go. So that was nice. Good. I was happy about that.
So you don't have a remote start?
No.
I do.
Really?
I do. I love it.
You're like rubbing in my face. You have a remote start. Yes.
I love it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm just going to sit here and drink my Bundaberg.
Do you have a tushy warmer?
No.
I have a tushy warmer.
Fuck you. And your tushy warmer and your automatic start.
I love my tushy warmer. That's the one thing I had to have in my car.
I used to have one. I don't have it anymore because we were leasing a Subaru, and the Subaru had a seat warmer in it. And then for some reason, I don't know, I feel like when I was looking for a new car, that just didn't factor in.
Okay.
Because once you sit down, there's not, like, you're not getting rushes of cold air on your ass. So right. It's not like your ass is going to get cold when it's sitting. You know, it's going to start building up heat. And I was like, well, I don't really need that. That's kind of like, I don't know, whatever. It's like, it's so an extra nice. I don't really need. And then the auto start, I don't know. I've never had one, like, ever in my life. And I just have felt like I don't need one, you know?
That's okay.
I mean, I'm not that type of person that's like, okay, now I'm going to go and pull my car out of the garage and park it in front of my house. And, you know, whatever. Because I feel like that defeats the purpose of an auto start. Because yeah. I will actually have to get in my car and drive my car around to the front of the house and then leave it running. So I'll have to get in and turn it on anyway because I don't want to just leave my garage open because people are assholes. So it's like, and crime in this area is actually been getting a little worse.
Oh, I'm here sorry. And there.
Yeah. People are dicks.
Yeah, they are.
They're just dicks.
They really are.
Sometimes they eat your soup.
Yeah.
So I'm drinking this Bundaberg, and it's lovely. It's ginger beer. So if anybody's interested in the Bundaberg, it's probably like Bundabag or whatever with the do it with an Aussie accent. I can't. Bundaberg. No?
No, I don't think I can do it.
I don't know.
Bundaberg.
Well, it's B-U-N-D-A.
Bundaberg.
It's like Bundaberg, except it's Bundaberg.
Bundaberg.
Yeah, it's Australian, family-owned, and it's craft brewed over 3 days.
Not my thing.
Apparently, it's always cloudy in a bottle of good old-fashioned ginger beer. That's what the Bundabergs say. I don't know. Whatever. It's fine. I think it was at Sam's Club, maybe.
That's where you found it?
Came in like a case of 12. I didn't get to go because we don't have a membership. And you can apparently only bring one friend into Sam's Club like a real asshole.
Are you kidding?
So I was like, well, I guess I'll stay home. And my wife was like, well, but, you know, like, I'll, you know, give my friend a call or whatever and see, you know, if it is actually one person. I said, dude, if we get there and there's only one person allowed in and you want to go in and I have to sit in the car, I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm just going to wait at home. You tell me all about it, how wonderful it is and how great it was. Hmm. And I'll just sit here.
It's not the same at Costco.
I'll just sit here and imagine it all. Oh, it's not?
No.
It's not the same at Costco?
Mm.
How many people can you bring in?
I think as many as you want. Mm. Because I always go with my mom.
Okay, guys, so next weekend, all of us haunt heads are going to gather at the Sam's Club in Menominee Falls. I'll see about renting a bus. We'll all go there and we'll stage a massive protest of freaks and geeks and scare the shit out of some greeters who were like, I left Walmart for this. Yes. Yes, you did. As far as news is concerned, the only news that I really have is I've been looking at new microphones and a mixer. I really want to get something that has like a jack that I can jack into the mixer and then run that through my computer. Yeah. And have an actual software program that can help us sound a little bit better. So yeah, it's a work in progress, and I'm still, you know, surfing Amazon and Best Buy. And because, you know, you don't ever go into Best Buy and buy anything. You just go and you look on Best Buy for something, and then you compare prices, and then you go to Amazon. Yeah, that's what you do. That's not why malls are dying at all.
No.
Brick and mortar is in trouble? Oh, it's not because of me. I didn't set foot in a fucking store this Christmas. This past Christmas.
Wow.
Not one foot. I was like, nope. 1,000 miles of nope. It's not going to happen.
I'm trying to think what I bought at a store.
No, we'll randomly go to stores and like buy random stuff. But mm-hmm. like during the holidays, mm-mm. Nope.
I don't think I did much holiday shopping either. I did actually for the first time this year. I was on Amazon.
Yeah, love me some Amazon.
All right. Sounds all right. Good.
What's new with you? How did your aftermath or your show go?
Very well.
Yeah.
Very well. I have a few commissions that I'm working on.
Oh, wonderful. And,
yep.
Glass or?
Two glass. Well, three glass, actually. And okay. One painting.
Nice.
So that's good. Yeah.
That is good.
Yeah.
That's what you want to do.
That's what I want to do. You're absolutely correct. Yeah.
Turning your passion into a job.
Yes.
Imagine that.
Yes. Slowly but surely.
Yeah. Well, you know, all you can really do is do it.
Right.
And see what happens.
Right.
That's really all you can do.
If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why, like, I do the podcasting stuff and, like, I do the writing stuff. And then I also have a job or, like, have a couple of jobs to kind of pad it so that if I'm like, hey, I really want to buy a mixer for the podcast, then I can go and buy a mixer for the podcast, not have a problem.
Right.
So, yeah, it's always nice to, like, have your passion be able to, you know, or have your job be able to fuel your passion or have your passion and your job be the same thing.
Right.
I listen really hardcore to a podcast called My Favorite Murder. With Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark. I know that Georgia is big into, like, haunted and creepy shit, and, like, I always, at the end of every episode, I'm like, is she gonna say it? Come on, Georgia, I know, you've seen the podcast on iTunes, come on. Just say it, just once. But she never does. So,
what is she gonna say?
Well, no, because I want her to listen to it. And I've sent her messages like, hey,
I see what you're saying.
You should listen to this because you like haunted creepy shit. And we do haunted creepy shit, so you should listen to it. But this week she had a recommendation about some podcast that talks about different diseases or something.
Oh.
It's called This Podcast Will Kill You. And it's about, it's about diseases and shit. I don't know. Anyway, I've never listened to it. I'm totally going to download some episodes, though, because I think it sounds fucking hilarious. So I don't know.
Yeah, you would like that.
Yeah. I've also started listening to a podcast called Haunted Places. It's from a podcasting company called Parcast.
Hmm.
That one's really good. There's another one called Case File that I'm trying to get into. It's murder porn.
Okay.
So it's like true crime shit. But the guy has an Australian accent, and I'm having a really hard time. Sometimes he talks really fast, and so I have to listen to certain sections one or two times because I'm like, I didn't get that. Yeah, okay. I didn't get that again. Okay. But he talks about, like, different... so far, he's only talking about different things that are happening in Australia.
Okay.
And I don't know much about true crime in Australia, so I was like, now I have a full-time data entry job that I sit at. for 40 hours a week. I need something else to do. So it kind of keeps my mind occupied, and, you know, I can mindlessly do my data entry and then also listen to my podcast. So yeah, Case File, Haunted Places. What's the other one? Oh, Dirty John.
Oh.
That one's really good.
What's that about? Or what does he have on there?
Here, let me... I think it's by...
I love the name.
I feel like it's by... it has 4.5 stars out of 5 on iTunes. And it's got over 13,000 ratings.
Wow.
So it's got some really good reviews. So this one, I'll just read you the little episode note here for episode 1. So it says, Deborah Newell, an interior designer in Southern California, meets John Meehan on an over 50 dating site. His profile looks exciting. Anesthesiologist, divorced, Christian. She falls in love fast, but her children dislike him and warn her that his stories don't add up. A psychologist advises Deborah to set firmer boundaries with her kids, saying that she has a right to be happy. And just a little kind of spoiler, it doesn't get better from there.
Oh.
So it's very, and that's it's a very John. Good, yeah, Dirty John. And then, obviously, I'm still listening to Lore because Lore is amazing. I've also started listening to the No Sleep podcast, which takes all of the, like, creepy, spooky stories on Reddit and reads them.
Oh, okay.
So it's, like, pretty, and, like, sometimes the authors, like, people who actually wrote them on Reddit, read them on the show.
Okay.
But for the most part, it's a Canadian guy, David Cummings, who reads a lot of the shows. Thus far, I'm only into, like, season 3. And he's just now talking about turning it into a thing that, like, people will pay to listen to and, like, whatever. So,
cool.
But there's several seasons, and if you need something to sit down and binge, the No Sleep podcast is really pretty fantastic. If you like horror, creepy stuff. I'm trying to think of anything good that I've watched on Netflix. Oh, The End of the Fucking World. Amazing show on Netflix.
Oh.
You have to watch it. It's like a cross between Juno and Bates Motel.
Oh.
Together.
Very strange.
It's pretty fantastic.
And it just started?
I think it's just become available pretty recently. But okay. But I think it's the first season right now is available on Netflix. All and right. I'm like halfway through it. I'm like pecking at it because I don't want it to go away too fast.
Okay.
Because then, you know, you have to wait for a year or whatever, and then there's another one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to slowly consume the season and let it sit on my palate for a little while before I actually swallow it and bite the bullet and
okay.
have nothing else to watch. What else have I been watching on Netflix? Freaks and Geeks.
Okay.
Very funny.
Yeah.
All about life in high school, which, if any of you remember, was horrible.
Yep.
I don't know that there's anybody don't that I've ever met.
There.
yeah, it's really funny because, like, my dad would always be like, you know, you're so anxious to graduate high school, you're going to be so sad when it's over.
Nope.
And I left the parking lot in my fucking car with my best friend, and I was like, woo! Like, yes! No, we're out of this fucking school. Place. God! I hope it burns down. I hate it. I hate everything yep. in it. Like, I just, yeah. Yeah. And I've never once been like, oh, I wish I could go back to high school.
I went to never. One reunion.
Oh, really?
And that was it.
I didn't get an invite.
Oh.
To my last high school reunion, which was 20 years.
Well, I haven't gotten those either. I went to my 20 year. I did not go to my 10 year.
Mm.
And I haven't been invited since.
Yeah. They didn't do a 10-year. They did a 20-year. And I was like, really? You guys didn't even invite me? Now, mind you, I would have been like, fuck you people.
Yeah.
110% fuck you people. And I never would have gone. But just the fact that they didn't invite me, and they, like, so many of those people in that high school just crucified me the entire time I was there. Because I've always been weird. You know, like, I've always been that weird person who, like, you know, likes comic books and, you know, enjoys, like, different shows on TV than other people and, like, horror movies. Like, I've always been a horror movie addict. Like, I've always consumed that kind of media.
Right.
And I would say, arguably, a gluttonous fashion. but, yeah, it's, it just, I don't know, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I was like, really? You assholes fucking tortured me, and now you're not even going to invite me to the, yeah. And it wasn't like nobody could find me, because I'm pretty out there.
Well.
Yeah. I was like, whatever. Yeah. I was
screw
like, fuck
them. Who needs them?
other than that, have you been watching anything on Netflix that you would recommend?
No, not really.
No?
No.
Any smut books that you would recommend?
Anything
your
that's
fucking
Christine
smut books?
Feehan. I love Christine Feehan.
Smut books.
Yeah, hey. Gotta get your jelly somehow.
I guess. I don't know.
But I haven't really been watching a whole lot of TV. I watch TV, but it's all mindless crap, you know? I haven't been into a series in a long time.
Yeah.
I can't even think of what I've been watching lately. Yeah, nothing great.
Uh-huh.
I like to watch the Little Women shows. The Little Women of Atlanta and L.A. They make me so mad.
For a second there, I thought you meant, like, Little Women. The, like...
Cartoon?
Literary...
No. No, I like the Little Women shows, but I get so mad at them. I yell at the screen.
I think that that's what they were designed for.
Yeah.
I feel like they weren't designed so that you would sit quietly and eat your popcorn and watch them destroy the lives of themselves and everybody around them.
Yeah.
I
well,
think
they're
that they
so
were
mean
meant
to this one girl on there, Kaylee,
well,
and she's so sweet.
God.
She has issues, but she really is good-hearted.
Hmm.
It's like, leave Kaylee alone, people.
God, are we going to go into, like, a tirade now? Like, leave Britney alone!
That's
with, like,
the
mascara streaming down your face. If you're going to wear mascara, by the way, and you're going to do a leave Britney alone tirade, at least get fucking waterproof mascara.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. That's all I buy
They
now.
Made it back then. It existed. He's just decided not to go there.
Oh.
Yeah. This week, I was really super into talking about corpse wax. And I thought, you know, I'll start researching that. And then eventually I got bored with it. And I was like, nah, I don't really want to do that this week. So that will come later. I also was looking at the Winchester Mystery House. And then I was like, I don't think I really want to do, like, a full-on hardcore, like, haunting thing. But I still really want to hear about it, so I sent it to Mimi, so I don't know if she...
I did do it, but
okay.
I really focused on Sarah.
Oh, that's okay.
So.
Yeah, so then I started researching premature burial and safety coffins. And I decided that that was what I was going to hang my hat on this week. So,
okay.
That's where I am. But, yeah, kind of a shorter one. It's kind of on the shorter side. But I called it Ring My Bell, Safety Coffins, and Death in the Victorian Era.
Love your titles.
Something really interesting about safety coffins and the invent of safety coffins is a lot of the expressions that we use nowadays are from that era.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Saved by the Bell, well... You know, if you're in a safety coffin, they would attach like pulleys and bells and shit, you know, to the arms and the legs and the corpse. And then if you suddenly, quote unquote, woke up, you could ring the bell and you would be saved by it. There's also, let's see, there's Saved by the Bell. Dead Ringer is another one that I think is really cool. So, yeah, I think it's really cool how language has influenced us and how we've brought it, you know, from as far back as the Victorian era. Into modern day. It's just kind of neat. I'm big into language and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So, who wants to go first?
I went first last time. Your turn.
I went first last time.
You want me to go first?
No, I can go first. I'm excited to hear about the Winchester Mystery House, because I really, it's on my list of things that I want to see.
Me too.
I really want to go to the Winchester Mystery House, and I want to tour Alcatraz.
I got this close to it.
Alcatraz?
No.
Oh,
well, both, actually.
Oh.
Actually, both. An inch close.
Oh.
Yeah, it was such a bummer. We didn't get to go to either.
Oh.
And we were so close, and yet so far.
Right, yeah. That's always the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, for any of you who were wondering, this is Hauntheads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. And I am Janine Mercer.
And I'm Mimi Steven.
Hello again.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. I'll have to take that and move it closer to the beginning.
Yeah.
it's really funny how I always say it's the podcast that goes bump in the night, but we almost always do it at like 3:30.
Right.
So it's like the podcast that goes bump at midday. It doesn't really sound. Or the podcast that goes bump on a Saturday at around 10.
Well, they don't know. They can't see that.
Well, you know. Well, now I've spoiled it. So now it's we're just fucked. Oh well.
So we're not sitting here at midnight.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's no sitting here with creepy taxidermy at midnight.
No.
Okay. So fine. You went first last time, so I'll go first this time. So as I said, name of the piece: Ring My Bell, Safety Coffins, and Death in the Victorian Era. If you're interested ding-ling, ring-a-ding-ding. If you're interested in seeing this article firsthand, you can absolutely go to the Hauntheads blog. It is hauntheads.wordpress.com. So I think that it's safe to say that those who lived during the Victorian era had an obsession with death. They crafted small portraits made from the hair of deceased family members that could be placed in brooches and worn. They wore something called a lacrimatory bottle around their neck. They're often mistaken for perfume bottles. And they were used to catch the tears of mourning. And then they would put a little stopper on it and they would wear it around their neck as they were mourning the loss of that individual. It was just a thing. It was all about saving tears. I don't know.
Okay.
But people collect them. There are people that have huge collections of lacrimatory bottles. And they erected lavish monuments at gravesites.
Yes.
They even purchased new sets of mourning clothes each time someone passed on, because keeping such clothing afterward and reusing it was considered bad luck. In fact, there were stores that existed that catered only to those in mourning and sold every single item an individual might need to properly mourn a loss. Very fascinating. And of course, there were different times for mourning. So they would range from 4 weeks. So if your first cousin died, you would mourn them for probably around 4 weeks. And then if your spouse died, it would be more like 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I believe it was Queen Victoria that when her husband died, that she pretty much mourned his loss for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
Very sad. But, you know, when you think about it, wearing black clothing or dark clothing is not that odd. I mean, we do that. You know, for funerals, you know, you don't go in some, you know, bright red, you know, dress or anything. You know, you put on dark clothing. You're supposed to be somber. But since we've moved away from the regular practice of purchasing a special coffin for grandma, fully equipped with a bell, feeding and breathing tube, and a spare set of crypt keys, just in case she was mistaken for dead, that's probably more odd. So, yeah, basically, welcome to the wondrous and often crazy world of safety coffins. So, taphophobia, the fear of being buried alive, was quite common in the Victorian era, mainly because it was often difficult for doctors at the time to say for sure whether or not someone was sincerely dead. I'm currently flashing back to that scene from The Wizard of Oz where the Munchkin coroner proclaims the Wicked Witch most sincerely dead. On a completely unrelated note, I actually visited the National Museum of Funeral History in Houston, Texas, when I was there in March of last year, and I saw the costume worn by Meinhardt Rob in the film. So anyway, yeah.
I don't know what that is.
He was the little person that played the coroner.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was his name?
Meinhardt Rob. Yes.
Oh, okay.
He's actually originally from Milwaukee.
Really? I didn't know that.
He went to UW-Milwaukee and got a degree in accounting.
Huh.
He then went on to work with Oscar Mayer, the Oscar Mayer company. And he was actually hired because at the time they had the first Wienermobile,
mm-hmm.
and he was the only one who was small enough to drive it.
Oh.
So they hired him so that he could drive the Wienermobile. And he actually apparently was also instrumental in the creation of canned sausages.
Oh.
For like the war effort.
Wow.
Yeah. So fascinating little guy. But anyway, I digress. I'm just the font of useless information. I don't know. God. Anyway. So bodies would often be kept in what was called a waiting mortuary, or it could often be called an apparent dead house. That's what they were called in the Netherlands, for a period of time prior to being buried. So the bodies in these mortuaries were cared for by a staff of nurses, and they were not buried until they showed signs of putrefaction.
Ew.
Yeah. So flowers were placed by each bedside to mask the odor of decay. And mirrors or feathers were common tools that were held under the nose or the mouth of the deceased to check for breath. In Europe, these crazy Europeans, hi European listeners, thank you so much for listening, but y'all be cray, okay? way back when, anyway. So in Europe, tobacco smoke enemas were often employed to see if somebody was actually dead. So it was administered using a bellows. Originally, they were done using a pipette, and the smoke was blown into the rectum from the mouth of whoever was doing the check. So I bet the person that had to do that fucking job was like, thank Christ I get to use a bellows now. My job is so much less creepy. Oh my God. Okay. If I had to blow smoke up one more asshole from this pipette. So apparently the sensation of smoke was supposed to wake those who were falsely proclaimed deceased. I don't know. I think somebody sticking a pipette up your butt would probably be a thing. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Mimi's just sitting over there screwing up her face like, what the fuck? Yeah.
Who would even think of something like that?
The Europeans. Shout out to the Europeans. I don't know.
Ew.
So the fascinating thing about this whole practice is the fact that sometimes people fucking woke up.
Seriously? That actually worked?
Sometimes people woke up. And they were like, dude, I don't even know you.
Get that thing out of my ass.
Hello. All right. So, of course, when they woke up, these cases then served as proof that the practice was viable, so it continued. Now, of course, probes and needles were also used to poke and prod the body, likely to give the poor bastard stuck with the smoke-blowing job a break. They were like, it's okay, Bob. You just go have a seat, rest your lungs, try to wipe the sight of that corpse's arsehole out of your mind, because you're not going to dream about that tonight. And we'll just poke this thing with a stick and see what happens. I don't know.
Yeah, but how gross it would be if the body's already starting to decay and you open up, you put something in the cavity and then what comes out? Ew.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, theoretically at this point, they've already been, they've been washed and whatever.
Yeah, but
And when you die, you evacuate. So that theoretically has already been...
Yeah, but there's gases
taken care of
that are constantly coming out of you.
Why do we constantly go back to farts with you?
Because like, there's a lot of farting going on in my house.
Yes, there's a lot of farting going on, but oh my God. Okay, so anyway, they decided that occasionally they would give poor Bob in the corner with his pipette or his bellows a break. So I just pictured them like all sitting around in a circle and being like, okay, so we're going to draw straws. And the person who gets the short straw has to blow smoke up this corpse's arse. So, anyway, yeah, they started to employ, the prods a lot more. And, you know, I said, that's a shitty end to the practice of drawing straws. Excuse the pun. Wah, wah. You know what? You can't fire me because you're not paying me. And this is not an actual job. So, haha, you're stuck with me. Well, actually, no, you can unsubscribe. But don't unsubscribe. Don't do that. We love you. We love you. We love all of you. Every last one of you. Okay, so the first safety coffin was designed by Duke Ferdinand of Brunswick around 1790. And his model included an air and feeding tube, a window to allow light, and a spare set of keys for the coffin itself and the tomb in which it was housed. So yeah, he had these keys sewn into a little pocket in his garb.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, when he was buried, the keys would still be there. And then he could just unlock it and walk out. Which I guess is a lot easier than lying underneath the ground and feverishly, like, ringing a bell.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That would give you a heart attack.
Well, you know, they say that if you're ever accidentally buried alive, what you should do is you should take, like, deep breaths and try to hold them for as long as possible and let them out very slowly. So if you're ever, you know, accidentally buried alive, try to do that. Okay.
Well, hopefully I won't be.
cross our fingers. Don't worry. When you pass away, I will be there with a pipette and a cigar. Just to be sure.
No. If it's my time, it's fine.
Just let me go, Janine. Put the pipette down.
I'm being cremated anyway.
For Christ's sake. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's not really going to work. I'd just blow the ashes all over the place. Oh, well. Anyway. Okay, so by the 19th century, the Germans had created a whole line of safety coffins, around 30 or so different models. And they included elaborate bell and pulley systems. Now, unfortunately, the human body tends to bloat when it's decomposing, and this causes the corpse to shift. So attaching bells and pulleys to the arms and the legs of the corpse, and then burying it underground, and then waiting for somebody to be mistakenly buried alive and ring the fucking bell, could just be decomposition. So, like, somebody could be dead for, like, a week, and all of a sudden the bell's ringing. And it's like, oh, shit, no. That person is not alive, they're just rotting. So using a bell to detect accidental death is about as realistic as Dustin Diamond resurrecting his career at this point. But many mortuaries and cemeteries employed the bell as a tool to detect mistaken burial. I called this section Saved by the Bell, which is why there's a Dustin Diamond reference in there.
Yep. Screech. I
couldn't let it lie. I just couldn't. I was like, nope, gotta write it.
That boy needs serious help.
It's coming out. Yeah. Well, you know, I heard that his dildo business went really well.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know how it's going right now. I feel like he got arrested because he was in a bar fight or something in Port Washington.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
But who would want one of his...
I don't know the answer to that question. Yeah. Apparently he's pretty well endowed. I don't know.
Boy, this is kind of a gross show today.
Yeah, sorry. I would love to include a disclaimer, but unfortunately we're already in the shit. So it is what it is at this point. If you were eating anything, you're probably not eating it anymore, or you're throwing it up into a garbage can, which is okay too. That's fine. That's just fine. If you've ever gone wandering through Evergreen Cemetery in Vermont, you might have come across the grave of Dr. Timothy Clark Smith, whose window to the world is likely the creepiest physical manifestation of taphophobia. This window is actually like more of a tube that has like a cap on either end.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows visitors to look down the tube and in the face of the sleeping Dr. Smith, at least it used to. Now when you look in there, all you see is darkness and condensation. But this was, he died a long, long time ago. So, I mean, I'm sure that he's fully decomposed and there's nothing to see anyway. But he was super scaring the living shit out of people when he was freshly dead, because you could literally like walk over there and look down and see him down there. Just lying there, rotting away. It was fine. Yeah, whatever.
I'd like to see him.
Yeah. Well, too late. You're born too late. Nobody will ever get to see him again. And I'm sure that the people who did see him are probably dead. But I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, he must have turned over.
Was he rolling in his grave?
Turned over in his grave because he can't see out either end either.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So, and that's true. What he wanted, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so, like I said, I'm pretty sure that all you can see now is, there's a couple of pictures on the blog of the little, it's like a little square opening, mm-hmm. and you can look down there, but all you can see is, like, condensation and, like, some greenery or something has grown up through it, so you can't
ashes
see anything
to
anymore.
Ashes, dust to dust.
Yeah, pretty much. You could also see the hammer and chisel that he was buried with to aid in his escape.
Oh.
If he needed to get out in a hurry, so they could see that, too. So, of course, when Smith died, he was most sincerely dead. Others were not entirely so lucky. So, in a report that dates back to the 14th century, whether it's entirely truthful or not, and there is some speculation, it is said that the philosopher John Duns Scotus lived from 1266 to 1308. Was buried alive. Now, this connection is linked directly to Cardinal Stritch University. We have a hall that is called Duns Scotus that houses some classrooms. And I was actually very fascinated to find out this kind of creepy fact because it's like, you know, you go to a Catholic university and you're like, meh, whatever. You know, it's just the Franciscans, you know, religion and whatever. And I'm not really a big religious person, so it's like, meh, whatever. And then they were like, oh, hey, you know, check out this information on John Duns Scotus. And then I did some research of my own and found out that it is speculated that he was buried alive. And I was like, that's like the coolest thing about my university ever. Like, I love that shit. So, yeah, I did a bunch more research on that. But upon exhumation, Scotus was reportedly found outside of his coffin, and his hands and fingertips were torn and bloody. So in Buried Alive, The Terrifying History of Our Most Primal Fear, author Jan Bonderson writes, "The first evidence of any concerns in England over signs of death and the risk of premature burial appears in St. Francis Bacon's Historia Vitae et Mortis. He knew the famous philosopher John Duns Scotus had been liable to some obscure kind of fit, during which he became surprisingly deathlike. When he was staying in Cologne, he was declared dead and buried after a fit, but his servant came up and said that the wretched man had probably been buried alive. He, the servant, had been instructed to prevent this at all costs, but he had taken a detour and arrived too late."
Oops.
Yeah, that's some shit, isn't it? "He had taken a detour and arrived too late." Where do you suppose he went? To a brothel?
Probably.
He was like, meh, Johnny will be fine. I'm just going to skip off to this brothel here and have fun with these ladies. And,
yep.
And then I'll just skip off to where I need to go. What a douche.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't looking out for him.
Let me tell you, I'm sure if Duns Scotus had his time back, he would have done a better background check on that guy. When Duns Scotus's coffin was exhumed, it was seen that the corpse's hands were torn and the fingers were gnawed, from which it was concluded that the servant's apprehensions had only been too valid. For many years, Duns Scotus's tomb had a plaque with a Latin inscription, which was translated as follows: "Mark this man's demise, O traveler, for here lies John Scott, once interred, but twice dead. We are now wiser and still alive, who then so erred?" But there's a lot of speculation surrounding it. So some people say that it actually was a thing, and some people say it wasn't a thing. I like to think it was a thing because, as I said, it was the most interesting thing from my college that I thought was the most interesting. And I was like, fuck it, I believe it. So
you said that he was exhumed.
Yes.
And they found him outside his...
They found him outside of the coffin.
So he wasn't, like, in the ground. He was in a mausoleum or something?
No. They buried him. They interred him. But he had somehow, like... gotten out of the coffin.
Under the ground.
That's basically what they were saying. He got out of the coffin, but he couldn't
make it all the way up
to the top. So, I don't know. Like I said, you know, there's a lot of, you know, did it happen, didn't it happen? Yeah. But I don't know.
Weird.
Yeah, weird history, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And a weird connection to Stritch.
Yeah.
Shout out to Stritch. Woohoo! Okay, so according to Wikipedia, newspapers have reported cases of exhumed corpses which appear to have been accidentally buried alive. On February 21st, 1885, February 21st is my birthday.
Oh!
Which is why I included this. I was like, fantastic, that's my fucking birth. Well, not in 1885. 1981 was, I was born. Not that old. The New York Times gave a disturbing account of one such case. The victim was a man from Buncombe County whose name was given as Jenkins. His body was found turned over onto its front inside the coffin, and apparently much of his hair was pulled out. Scratch marks were also visible on all sides of the coffin's interior. His family was reportedly, quote, distressed beyond measure at the criminal carelessness associated with the case.
Why was he exhumed?
I don't know the answer to that question. Oh. It doesn't say. It just says that they exhumed him for some reason.
Okay.
I don't know. Shits and giggles? I don't know. Very they were like, strange. Hey, let's check on Mr. Jenkins just randomly. Maybe Ed Gein was there.
Maybe.
Yeah. And he was like, I'd like to check on Mr. Jenkins, please. I would imagine that's how he sounded. I don't know.
I don't know.
I've never actually heard him. I don't think I've ever heard him speak. You ever heard Ed Gein speak?
Uh-uh.
I'm going to have to go to YouTube after this. Trying to figure out. I feel like he was, like, really soft-spoken and had, like, kind of an effeminate voice.
Well, I know he was soft-spoken because he didn't talk much to other people.
Yeah.
I just always imagined he had a muffled voice.
Yeah, really, like, gravelly? Yeah. I don't know. I feel like his voice was more effeminate. Okay, so let's see here. Scratch marks. Family distressed, blah, blah, blah. So, another similar story was reported in the Times on January 18th, 1886. The victim in this case is described simply as a girl named Collins from Woodstock, Ontario, Canada. Her body was described as being found with the knees tucked up under her body, and her burial shroud was torn to shreds. So, I can't even imagine the horror of waking up and realizing that.
Mm-mm.
You've been buried alive. Like, that's just fucking insane. So, yeah, I mean, when you read about all these stories of mistaken burial, premature burial, you're like, that doesn't still happen. It absolutely does. Which is really unfortunate. And let me tell you, I think nowadays it really comes down to, like, the efficacy of, like, the physician that declares you dead. Like, what are you doing there, doc? Take your thumb out of your ass and check their pulse a little bit better to make sure that they're fucking dead. Like, what? We have all of these tools now. We have all these machines that we can hook people up to, and we're still burying them alive? Please. Come on. Like, how much do doctors get paid?
Did you find, like, what the closest to our time? Did you find anything?
So, in 2005... a body bag was delivered to the Ma Therese Funeral Home in Ashland, Massachusetts, with a live occupant. So, funeral director John Ma Therese discovered this, called paramedics, and avoided live embalming and premature burial. Because that's a thing now. Like, way back when, they didn't necessarily, right, you know, do that. Now, it's basically like, unless it's prohibited by some religious affiliation,
mm-hmm.
Like, I believe in the Jewish culture, the embalming is sometimes not a thing.
Yeah,
or
no,
is
they
just
don't
not
embalm
a thing, period.
Yeah, I think that, like, the Orthodox don't embalm. That's why we try to bury within 24 hours.
Okay.
It's usually about 48, but we try.
Yeah. Because I think that didn't embalming come about during the Civil War? I feel like it took a long time to ship bodies home.
Maybe.
And so they started doing it, you know, they started embalming because you know, were worried about the bodies reaching their destination still intact without, mm-hmm. you know, the decomp or without excessive decomp.
Can you imagine being alive and kind of stuck in your head and kind of unable to open your eyes?
And somebody's embalming you?
Ugh.
I can't, yeah. Oof. Man, oh man. I'm gonna have to add a disclaimer to the beginning of this episode, because there are gonna be people who are like, oh my god, not gonna sleep for the next 2 weeks. This is insane. Just puked up my dinner all over the place because I listened to this while I was eating my bagel from Einstein Brothers or whatever. I don't know. Okay, so that was 2005. The most recent story that I found was 2014. So it's only 2018. Like, pretty close. In Piraea, Thessaloniki in Macedonia, Greece.
Okay.
That's what I said, okay. I just copied and pasted this. I was like, okay, paste. The police discovered that a 45-year-old woman was buried alive and died of asphyxia after being declared clinically dead by a private hospital. She was discovered just shortly after being buried by children playing near the cemetery who heard screams from inside the earth. Those kids are never going to fucking sleep again.
No.
And afterwards, her family was reported as considering suing the private hospital. Just considering it. We're thinking about this seriously. You declared somebody dead, and then they got buried. Maybe we'll sue you. Like, that wouldn't... It must be in Greece, because if it happened in America, they would be like, nope, we're going to court.
So then she suffocated before they could get her out.
Oh, my God. In 2015, it was reported that in 2014, again, in the same place, the police investigation concluded that a 49-year-old woman was buried alive after being declared dead due to cancer. Her family reported that they could hear her scream from inside the earth at the cemetery shortly after burial, and the investigation revealed that she died of heart failure inside the coffin, because who the fuck wouldn't have a heart attack
right.
when they figured out they were buried alive? They found out that it was actually the medicine that was given to her by her doctors for her cancer that caused her to be declared clinically dead and then subsequently buried alive.
Wow.
So, yeah, gotta be careful, you know, gotta pay attention there, doctors, because it's scary shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, really scary shit.
I wonder if their ghosts haunt the doctors.
I fucking would. I would be like, I am gonna haunt you for the rest of your life, and after you die, I'm going to make your afterlife a living hell. That's what I would do, personally. I would be a very vindictive ghost. So I'm interested to hear your guys' thoughts on the you know, whole safety coffin dealio, the Victorian view of death and bereavement, because I personally find it fascinating. I've actually been thinking about extending my creepy collection to include some hair pieces.
Oh.
Because they did a lot of hair art in the Victorian era. So I want to try to collect, like, some little brooches. I also want to start collecting coffin keys.
Wish I would have known that a couple of years ago. I had a brooch that was on a chain that had a piece of hair from, I don't know who it was from.
Did you open it?
Probably.
Do you remember if it had felt on the inside?
I don't remember.
Mm. Yeah, because usually they had, like, little felt backs, and then they were, like, kind of secured in place.
I remember the hair was kind of reddish.
Hmm.
And like that.
I'm like swoopy.
In there, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. So yeah, anyway, I'd love to hear your guys' comments on that. And I think that we should get to Mimi's story before she falls asleep.
Sorry, I'm very tired today.
She's very tired.
You can't control your yawns. They just happen.
So what you got,
okay,
Mimi?
So this week, as per your suggestion,
mm-hmm.
I did the Winchester House.
Fabulous.
Which is located in San Jose.
Sunny San Jose.
Do you know the way to San Jose? You don't know that song? That's from the 70s.
I was like, oh, me smelling burning toast. I'm just going to sit here and smile.
So I titled this, The House That Sarah Built.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Sarah...
And built.
And I think they're still building.
Really?
Well, they're working on it.
They keep finding new rooms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Sarah Pardee, as in P-A-R-D-E-E, was born in New Haven, Connecticut in 1939. Later, she will be known as Sarah Pardee Winchester. Sarah came from an upper-middle-class family. Her father was a very shrewd businessman who built carriages and later would go on to supply ambulances to the Union Army during the Civil War.
Yep.
So Sarah was a child prodigy. She was actually skilled at music, fluent in four languages, and very knowledgeable in the classics like Shakespeare and Homer. She was considered to be quite beautiful and the belle of New Haven. Sarah was raised near Yale University, and as such, I'll start that one again. Sarah was raised near Yale University, and as such, grew up with progressive thinkers and philosophizers. Philosophizers. Philosophers.
I guess philosophers.
Okay.
I guess. Yeah.
Her uncles were all Freemasons, and Sarah was admitted to Young Ladies Collegiate Institute of Yale College. The courses available to them, to women, were liberal arts, math, and sciences, at which she excelled in all. At Yale, she met the daughters of Reverend Dr. Wolsey Bacon, and one of his daughters believed Sir Francis Bacon was actually Shakespeare. This new ideology was called the Baconian Masonic Doctrine.
I'm still on Bacon. Yeah, I love Bacon.
Okay.
The minute you said that, I was
bacon,
like,
bacon, bacon.
I was like, shit, I could really go for some bacon right now.
Okay, so
for my Baconian craving.
She followed these beliefs for all of her life. She also was known as a, theosophist. T-H-E-O-S-O-P-H-I-S-T.
I would think that that's theosophist.
This perspective by Rudolf Steiner is a belief that the universe as a vast living organism in which all things are likened to individually evolving units or cells that comprise a greater universal synergistic body that is ever building.
Sometimes when I read this shit out loud, I just think that they take a bunch of words and they just stuff them together.
Yeah.
And they're like, here, these words go together.
Well,
because it just sounds like drivel when you read it out loud. You're like,
right.
What? Okay.
Right. So Sarah's life methodology is in the ever building ideology. Because
yeah.
She's ever building her house.
Mm-hmm.
William Wirt Winchester was born in Maryland in 1837. He was the only son of Oliver Winchester of the Winchester gun fame. Sarah and William married September 30th, 1962. In 1866, they had a baby girl named Annie, who died only 40 days after her birth.
Mm.
Sarah was distraught. Oliver Winchester, William's father, died in 1880, which left William heir to the Winchester repeating rifle fortune. Sadly, William died of tuberculosis only 1 year later, which left Sarah as the heir.
Consumption.
Yeah. She became one of the wealthiest women in the world.
After and also one of the craziest.
Yeah. Yeah. She was so lonely.
Well, yeah.
After the death of her husband, Sarah went away to Europe for a short time. It is believed that Sarah was able to gain admittance to the co-Freemasonry, which allowed women to join. Another idea is that Sarah went abroad and studied architectural landmarks and oddities. In 1884, Sarah became a resident of San Francisco Bay Area, and later she would buy an 8-room farmhouse in the Santa Clara Valley, which is now known as San Jose. Yeah. Do you know the way to San Jose? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
What is that from?
It's a song. Just, it's a song from the 60s or 70s, and I can't remember who sang it. But
okay, so guys, you're on your own.
I used to hear it. We would take driving vacations when I was little, mm-hmm. and my mom and dad had it on 8-track.
Oh, we used to nice.
Listen to it all the time.
Nice.
So.
I had a Supertramp 8-track that I loved. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I wish we had saved that stuff, but we didn't.
Of course, that wasn't my... That wasn't of my generation, 8-track.
No,
it was. I was set.
It was a little bit before mine, but.
Beta and cassette tapes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We grew up with the Beta first, the Betamax.
Yeah.
And then that tanked.
Apparently.
Even though it was better, though.
Yeah, well, apparently it was a better machine. It was mm-hmm. better built than the VHS players. Right. Apparently there is an entire library of embarrassing film. Of me at school plays and whatnot on Beta. Aww. And my father keeps saying that he's going to get them converted. And I'm like, if you get them converted, you better also change your name and enter the witness protection program. Because
I want to see them.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do. All right, so let's see. Since the loss of Sarah's only child and the loss of her husband, her grief was so profound and all-encompassing. A friend of Sarah's worried about her well-being and suggested she visit a spiritualist medium. Mm-hmm. The medium basically said that the spirit of William was there, and he said there was a curse placed upon their family.
Oh, God.
The curse was brought about by the deaths of all the people who were killed by Winchester guns. Sarah was told to sell her home and move west. She must start a new life. You will know the place when you see it, and you need to build a house for yourself and the spirits. Also, she was told, if you continue building, you will live. If you don't, you will die.
Hmm. So the psychic essentially created a mass psychosis in her.
Yes.
And so she felt like in order to escape the spirits, she had to keep building and building and building and building.
Yeah.
Wow. What an asshole.
I think so.
Like, way to go. You're a dick.
Well, the medium said that it was William who said that she had to do this.
Yeah, see.
Mm-hmm.
See, I feel like that's what happens to people who get money and who are already, like, a little kooky,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, I'm a little kooky, so I think if I ever got money, I would probably be even more kooky and would probably do crazy stuff like that, mm-hmm. you know, like go to psychics. And then when you have all this money, they want to tell you what you want to hear because they want you to give them more money.
Right.
So it's like, yeah. Right. God. What a douche.
Yeah. Really?
He's a douche canoe.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So Sarah did all that, and she sold her home, went to the San Francisco Bay Area, and soon found an 8-room house on 162 acres of land in the Santa Clara Valley, also known as San Jose. Da, da, da. Okay. So
I was going to say, work past it, Mimi.
She bought the house and land from a Dr. Caldwell. For 36 years, she built onto the house. She frequently tore down and rebuilt certain areas. Mm-hmm. She also had a fascination with the number 13. She had many rooms with 13 windows or panes, patterns in the floorboards, like 13 floorboards, and then mm-hmm. a different color,
yep.
13. 13 steps on her staircases. There were 13 cupolas to the greenhouses that she had, yep. which are, you know, those are the domes
yep.
over it. There were 22 carpenters that worked all day and night, every day of the year, 24/7. Sarah would meet every morning with her foreman and show him her sketches. The home ended up with 26 rooms and 7 stories tall in places. There were 3 elevators and 47 fireplaces. There were numerous stairwells going nowhere, doors that opened to walls, doors that opened to the outside, and if you went out the doors, you would fall to the ground.
Yeah.
and trap doors.
Weren't there stairs that also just led up to the ceiling?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there were stairs where if you thought you were going downstairs, you'd end up going upstairs.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. There were only two mirrors placed in the house because Sarah believed ghosts were afraid of their own images. During all this building and rebuilding, Sarah lived in the house. She was very much alone, except for the workers and servants. We can't forget the spirits, though. On nights when she would not sleep or was not talking with the spirits, she would play her grand piano, and people who would hear it play thought it was just the most beautiful music. But there were two keys that were out of tune,
yeah.
And but she played it just beautifully. So,
wow.
That's cool.
Can you imagine that? You're just sitting there late one night, and all of a sudden you hear this beautiful piano music wafting from this
mm-hmm.
gigantic house
right.
that you're next door to.
That'd be pretty kind of spooky.
Do people still hear the
It piano? Didn't say. I was wondering if it said, but I didn't read anything that said anything
like,
about the piano.
I feel like I saw a documentary like a dozen years ago about the Winchester Mystery House and how some nights you can hear the piano playing at like 3 a.m.?
Well, I wouldn't doubt it. Well,
which I guess 3 a.m. is the time when spirits
yeah.
are most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus 3 is 13, 3 she
yeah.
liked.
Mm-hmm.
In 1906, there was the great San Francisco earthquake. Some areas of the mansion were ruined.
Yeah.
The top three floors collapsed to the gardens below. Sarah got locked in the Daisy Room when her fireplace that was in there came down and the room shifted and locked her in.
Huh.
How they found her, I don't know.
I was going to say.
Sarah believed it was the spirits who created the earthquake so that the building would not stop. So the building began again. September 4th, 1922, Sarah Winchester died. Before her death, she had a seance with the spirits. Sarah was 83 years old. She left everything to her niece, Frances Marriott. There were rumors that Sarah hid money and jewelry, and she had a golden set of dishes that she would have, like, tea parties with the spirits
yeah.
with. And supposedly, they were locked away in a safe somewhere. So her family found many safes, and they opened them, but all they found was fish lines, socks, newspaper clippings about her daughters and her husband's deaths, a lock of baby hair, and a suit of woolen underwear.
Huh.
So the golden plates are still out there somewhere.
So there was a lock of
baby hair.
Baby hair in a safe.
Yeah.
Huh. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the things that we value. She had all this money. And she
right.
had all this affluence and was such a wonderful, intelligent person.
Right.
And in the end, what do you put in your safe? A lock of the hair of the child that you lost.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful stuff.
Mm-hmm. The house was sold to a group of investors to become a tourist area. One of the first visitors to the house was Robert L. Ripley from Believe It or Not.
Oh, yeah.
The house was said to have 148 rooms, but people could never come up with the same count twice.
Mm.
So they really don't know how. Last count, it was 160.
Mm.
Moving men kept getting lost in the house. It was as if the house was a puzzle and a labyrinth, and it just seemed to shift, and
yeah.
it took them forever to set up the house. People have reported strange things about the house. Psychics are convinced... There. Can't read my writing. Psychics are convinced that there are spirits in the house, including Sarah. Windows have broken on their own. Strange lighted orbs floating around. Banging doors. Bodiless footsteps. Cold spots. Doorknobs that turn by themselves. And many other things. There's a story of a man with very dark black hair seen fixing the fireplace in the ballroom. And he's also seen pushing a shadowy wheelbarrow down a long, dark hallway. Another time, a man was working on a ladder in the Hall of Fires. It's a room that had a few fireplaces, not just one.
Right.
When he felt someone tap on his back, he turned around and no one was there. So he went back to work, and the same thing happened again. He decided to leave the room because he felt very unwanted.
Oh, my.
So a tour guide named Sam led a group of visitors to the Daisy Room, the same room where Sarah was trapped in during the earthquake. Before the tour guide could begin telling about the room, there was a loud sigh. So she thought maybe a guest was lost in the hallway, so she went out to the hallway and didn't see anybody. But then all of a sudden, as she was turning back, she saw a very small, because Sarah Winchester was a very petite woman, 4'10", I believe.
Yeah.
So when she looked in the hallway again, when she turned around, there was a small, dark figure coming out and stepped around a corner. So Sam followed, and there was nobody there. And then she heard another. So Sam felt it was the ghost of Sarah Winchester.
Yeah.
And if you'd like to read about more stories, go to www.winchestermysteryhouse.com.
Yeah.
So I feel bad for her.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when they're hearing her sighing like that, I mean, I can only imagine the frustration that she must have felt.
Right.
Like being there all by herself and then having these builders who, you know, I believe that she used to have seances and then she used to dream about different additions to make to the house.
Mm-hmm.
So she would, like, wake up
and write it
and
down.
And instantly start writing things down.
Yeah, I heard that.
And
too.
Just give them to the builders, and then the builders would be like, okay, but this doesn't. Like, you want me to build a staircase that goes up into the ceiling? Like, what purpose does that serve? And she's like, it doesn't matter. It just needs to be built. And I think that was always the answer. It just needs to be built.
Just do it.
Just do it. And they did it. And it is apparently one of the most phenomenal things that you can see in your life. So I'm really hoping that I can get there and see it.
Yeah. I'd like to go see it.
And I want to see it twice. I want to see it through the tour.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to just be able to, like, go and... It's basically for the same reason that I want to go to visit places like Alcatraz.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that there's a lot of energy stored in these places. Not only paranormal energy, but just the energy of the person that lives there. Like, when I walk into this room, I know that it's mine because it feels like me, and I recognize all the things in here, but there's a deeper sense of, like, this is where
my
I
space.
Am, this feels right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a low-level hum, like a buzz or something.
I know exactly what you're saying.
But I want to go there, and I want to, like, put my hand on the fireplace and, like, just feel it, you know?
Right.
Just kind of feel it out. I think it'd be very cool.
Mm-hmm.
I and, you know, maybe have a conversation with Sarah Winchester.
Yeah.
Have a sighing contest.
Do you know what I saw? It was on... Do you ever look at the Pyramid Collection?
The Pyramid Collection?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's a really neat catalog. They have clothes and stuff, and it's more along... I don't know how to say this. It's not, like, all about fairies and Victorian era, but it has all that stuff in there. That spiritualist, and it's a pretty neat catalog.
Oh.
And they had a cuff bracelet made out of silver that had the Ouija board, the spirit board things on it.
Yeah,
I thought of you.
the talking
the talking board. Yes.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah, they had a. I think it was. It was like a serving tray, and it was the talking board, and then it came with little planchette coasters.
Oh!
And it was on, I think it was on sourpuss.com.
I've never heard of that one.
They have fantastic, fantastic stuff on Sourpuss. And then also Creepy Collection is another one that I like to go on because they have just cool, like, knick-knacky stuff that I'm cool. like, that's really cool. One of my contributors for Corvus Review sent me a cookie jar that looks like a giant brain cupcake. And it currently has tea in it, but I love it. And the handle on the top is an eyeball.
Oh.
So you, like, take off the top of the brain and get some tea out and then put it. I just, yeah. So it's in the kitchen right now.
Cool.
But, yeah, it's pretty fantastic. They just have really cool knick-knacky stuff that is perfect for somebody.
Like you.
Like me. Who is quite odd. Quite odd indeed. Delightfully odd.
Delightfully is true.
Yeah. So is that it for this week?
That's it for this week.
I'm always sad when it's over.
Yeah.
I'm always like, oh, we're done now for another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh,
well. I have to come up with more exciting
Well, you know, maybe there'll be something that I'll find and I'll be like, I don't really want to do this. Mimi. Do you want to do this and this and this for next week? And then I'll just send it to you and I'll do whatever I'm going to do and then do whatever I was going to do and then whatever.
Whatever.
No, I don't like to do that every week because I like, you know, I like the ideas that you come up with. But I really, at some point, like really want to tackle Dybbuk boxes.
Oh, okay.
Really a lot.
There isn't that much out there about them.
There's a bit. There's a bit. And I'm, like, super interested in them.
Well, I still, every time I look, I get the same, we'll have to compare notes.
Yeah.
But I get the same story. And
I'll
it's
send
like,
you some, I'll send you some links and stuff. Because they're, right. it's very interesting. I think that the story that you're talking about is, guy goes on eBay, buys Dybbuk box, strange shit happens, shadows, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
closes Dybbuk box, sells it to somebody else, shadows.
Yeah, the one they made the movie out of.
Scary shit, blah, 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 blah. Right. Buries it in the backyard and won't tell anybody where, the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit more out there than that, so.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll start
sending you
some.
Well, I just haven't searched that much, so.
I'll start sending you some links. For that shizzle.
Sounds good.
All right. So we're good for this week.
We are good.
All right. Okay, guys. So until next time, be sure to check out the blog if you would like to see show notes. Be sure to leave a rating on iTunes for us. Currently on American iTunes, we do have 5 out of 5 stars, but we don't have that many reviews. So we'd really like to see a little bit more from you guys as far as, you know, how you think we're doing, whether or not you think the podcast has improved over time. You know, shoot us an email at hauntheadscast@gmail.com and let us know some of the topics that you would like to hear covered. You know, some of them are funny and quirky and strange and whatever, and I'd like to talk about them, but I can't possibly think of everything that, you know, ever. So, So, yeah, I mean, you know.
We're here for you guys.
Yeah, send us that shit. We want to do it. We want to entertain you. So, yeah, until next time, take care. Everybody be your cool, awesome, creepy selves.
Peace out.
And as always, guys, stay spooky.